Okay, good morning. Now, as to the four Brahmaviharas, the four divine abidings, the first one and the easiest one to attain to is Metta Bhavana. Metta is loving kindness. And if you've never experienced a Brahmavihara before, this would be likely the best one to kind of aim at because it's the easiest. And to achieve it, it helps a lot if one has kept one's sila very pure for at least, you know, let's say a few days or a week, following the five precepts carefully. Just so that we can not have any sort of a sense of nagging guilt over what we've been doing that's bad. Okay, if you got some nagging sense of guilt over bad behavior, that will very subtly hold you back from this being an easy thing. And there's something a John Brahm said that I strongly agree with. Once in a while people ask him, of all the meditators you've ever met, the ones who can attain to the jhanas or to the Brahmaviharas, if you could describe their personality, the ones who achieve it the easiest and most often, what kind of personality do they have? What do they have in common? And a John Brahm's answer to this is, it's people who are pure-hearted who will attain the easiest. Being pure-hearted. So pure-hearted here means like kind of innocent, not jaded. The opposite would be jaded. Jaded means like kind of cynical, defaulting to a negative view of things. So basically, a pure-hearted person is easily kind, easily warm or trusting, has good sila, has good morality, has good principles. That's pure-heartedness. So if you have that personality, that's an asset here. Now, let's just quickly look at the four Brahmaviharas. So metta is sort of the easiest one, the first one to work on, I would say. The second one is compassion, karuna. Then there's mudita, or sympathetic joy. And then upeka, or equanimity. And those are in increasing order of difficulty. And once one gains some experience in these Brahmaviharas, I would say you don't always have to start by aiming for metta. You can just sort of find out which one's the easiest of those four. Whichever one's the closest, easiest one, do that one. Whichever one's kind of the most accessible, the one that is closest to your current mood, that's the one to do. You know what? Metta is not even my favorite one of the four. It's probably the one that is my least favorite, actually, personally. My favorite one would be equanimity. My second favorite one would be compassion. My third favorite would be mudita. And my least favorite is metta. But that's not to say any of them are bad, okay? Whichever one you can do, do that. So metta, if I were to describe it, and it's hard to describe, you know, it's one of these experiences that no matter how you try to describe it, you're going to kind of fall short of giving it the true credit that it deserves, because really it's like a heavenly experience. It goes beyond worldly happiness. And it is, it's beautiful, it's sacred, it's, when we try to explain it with words, we are necessarily going to be using worldly words to describe something heavenly. So it's not gonna do it justice. Okay, no matter how I describe it, it won't sound all that special for how it actually feels. But, you know, just to say, like, it feels as though you're floating in the clouds, that's actually a pretty good description. Just like if you were an angel, okay, or a deva, floating in the clouds. How would that feel? That's how it feels. There is this phrase you see in the early Buddhist texts to describe it, kind of a poetic description. They call it above the world, above the world. And that is suggestive of actually, you know, floating in the sky, right? If you're above the world. And there's actually another kind of description I quite like. It's quite funny. Did anybody here read the book or hear the book when they were young? Journey to the West, also called Monkey. The book Monkey. Yeah? Okay, there's a few heads nodding. So that's one of the most famous books in Asia here, especially China. It comes from China. And it's, well, the main character is this monkey, but it's like half human, you know, half monkey. It can talk and, you know, relates to humans. And this monkey learns to meditate from a from kind of like a Zen master Buddhist monk, but he's also kind of Taoist as well. He's kind of both. And when he finally starts breaking through to the Brahmaviharas for the first time, this is described in the book as, or at least the English translation, it's described as, I read some of these books, by the way. It's described as cloud soaring, okay, like soaring in the clouds. So like to soar means to like fly like a bird high in the sky. And it's a very, you know, happy, beautiful way to describe it. Cloud soaring. And this this teacher of his was one of these like very strict, you know, a very strict teacher. And when his meditation was only kind of half good, you know, he was just a little bit, had some metta, he a little bit had some Brahmaviharas, his teacher would say to him, "You call that cloud soaring? That's cloud crawling. That's just cloud crawling. That's not cloud soaring." You know, like crawling like a baby. Like think of a baby crawling on its on the floor. So he had a very strict master. No, it had to be better. I thought that was really funny. But, you know, even if you're cloud crawling, that's still really impressive, I say, because most people can't do it at all. And later on, he in the book, by the way, he gets so good at it that he can do it really fast. He can enter this state of mind really fast. And it's called the cloud somersault. Like, imagine like a child kind of doing a roll on the floor, like turning over, a cloud somersault. So I guess that's just kind of a, he could do it in such a fast, good way. It's, you know, it's, this wasn't just cloud soaring. He could even do it in a fancy way. So it's interesting that there's like differing amounts of strength to this, you know. The more you practice this, the better you get, and the easier it gets. And yeah, in this book, Monkey, his meditation practice does progress throughout the book. It gets easier, better, you know. Actually, I like that because there's hardly any books which would have this in it. This is quite a mature, spiritually mature themed book in that way. It's a funny book. It's meant for kids, but it actually has some pretty well-described dynamics in it. Most other books you might read or movies or whatever which talk about meditation or have meditation, usually it's just, you know, one experience, one deep magical experience, and for all you know, as the viewer of the movie or the video or whatever, the story, listener to the story, you either have it or you don't, okay? It's either yes, you have it, or no, you don't, and it's one of the two. But it's interesting how it comes in different strengths, okay? And differing abilities to achieve it quickly or slowly. So metta would be characterized by like kind of the mood to it, the way we can visualize to open our hearts. And I should probably also point out, you can't really force this, okay? You can't force your heart to open. You can't force your heart to have this beautiful, radiant, you know, heavenly feeling. It takes time for this to happen. It might take months. It might take years. But it's, you know, you got to take your time and work on this. And when your heart's ready, it will open. But what we can do is gently suggest to our hearts, in while we're meditating, we can silently say things like this. May we all be at peace. May we all be at ease. And may no harm come to us. Or we might pick somebody in our life that we have an easy sense of affection for, you know, maybe our favorite cat or our favorite dog or our favorite stuffed animal, our favorite niece or nephew, someone that we already like, okay? And we can say, you know, may this nephew of mine, may they be at peace, may they be at ease. And may no harm come to them. Okay, so it's just a wish of goodwill. And this wish is, it's a very innocent sort of wish. And we set aside any kind of judging of that person. Okay, so this is, here's where it gets a little bit tricky to do. A lot of people have a very judgmental sort of mind. As soon as they think of anyone, they have judgments ready about that person, and those judgments come up right away, okay? So as soon as they might think of their, let's say they have a really, they have a boss who's a really mean and strict boss, you know, and as soon as you think of that boss, you know they're mean, you know they're strict, and you judge them as a mean person. You can't help but think of that meanness. You can't help but think of that, you know, difficulty in the relationship. So it's easy for these judgments to come like so fast that we don't even catch it. So the trick to metta here is that we are going to set aside these judgments. Okay, we're gonna imagine, let's say, that nephew or that cat or whatever. Whoever it is we want to imagine. And we're going to set all judgment aside. It's best to start with somebody you like or something you like. That's easier. But over time, if you want to build up your skill, you also need to be able to send metta to the people you don't like very much, like maybe that boss. And you will have to have the skill of setting aside the judgment. And it's hard. It's hard to think of that boss and not judge them as mean or whatever. Okay, so metta is, you know, there's this sense of innocence to it. Of like, may my boss be happy no matter what. And it doesn't matter how he behaves. I'm completely innocent to that boss's behavior, whether it's mean or not. I'm innocent to what sorts of, you know, bad things he does or whatever. It's just this pure-hearted wish. May they be at ease. May they be at peace. Okay, so over time, the better you get at metta, the better you get at sending it even to difficult people. That's when you know you're getting better at it. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough for today. Is there any questions? Okay, question at the back. Okay, what's the difference between radiating metta and transferring merits? In the early Buddhist texts, there is a sutta where the Buddha is asked about how does this transferring of merit thing work? Does it work? Is it real? How does that work? And the Buddha said, it can work if the recipient of the transferring of the merit is in the ghost realm. And only the ghost realm. If the recipient is in the human realm, the deva realm, the hell realm, the animal realm, the transfer of merit won't work. The recipient must be in the ghost realm. And basically, whatever radiance of heart we have through our gift giving, through our merit making, when we think of that person, that recipient in the ghost realm, it's almost like we're sending that radiance into the ghost realm and they receive it. Okay, so this radiance can sort of like go to the ghost realm and go to that recipient. And that's how the transfer of merit works, just by thinking of them. And then in the sutta, the person asking the question says, well, what if this person I'm trying to send it to isn't in the ghost realm? What if I'm wrong about where they are? Then the Buddha said, well, some other relatives of yours will get it instead, who are in the ghost realm. Okay, some relative or other of yours will get it. And then the person says, well, what if I have no relatives in the ghost realm? And the Buddha said, you certainly have relatives in the ghost realm. It's highly likely you have some relatives there. You can trust that this won't be a waste. If you have this intention, if you do this transferring of merit, you did not waste your time. It's always beneficial. It was always a good idea. That is not a wasted gift. Yeah, so it is a good thing to do, no matter what. So that's what he said in that sutta. There are a lot of that's the early Buddhist text answer. Although there is quite a strong folk belief that you can send it to people also in other realms, not just the ghost realm. Like, let's say, to fellow humans and this sort of thing. Like, when I go to visit this other monastery, I won't say the name, the monks and nuns have a custom they like to do a lot where they rejoice in each other's merit. They say, Sadhu, sadhu, anamodami. It is good, Venerable Sir. It is good, Venerable Sir. I rejoice in your merit. And then the response is, Sadhu, sadhu, anamodaita. Or actually, the anamodami is an invitation to rejoice in the merit. And then the next line, Sadhu, sadhu, anamodaita. That's the rejoicing in the merit. Yes, I rejoice in this merit. Okay, anumodana means I rejoice in your merit. So it's almost like they're inviting the other person. Will you rejoice in the merit? And the other person's like, yes, I rejoice in your merit. And so the magic here, if you could say magic, the magic here is somebody invited you to rejoice and then you rejoiced. You need to know what those Pali words mean, and then you have to do the rejoicing. And then, yeah, there was a sharing of merit. Somebody invited you to rejoice, and then you rejoiced. So, in that sense, yeah, that was a sharing of merit. But the other person has to know what the words mean and then do it. So that is something in the human realm. That wasn't to the ghost realm. Okay, so the magic is in the other person participating and rejoicing. And you just invited them to do it. Okay, so that is a modern day custom which is in the human realm. Yeah, not the ghost realm. Okay, any other questions? No? Okay, well then I'll just conclude then.